Welcome everyone to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy Traina. Thanks so much for listening. A little sports media news potpourri today with John Oran of Sports Business Journal. So if you're into the sports media news, we cover the NFL television negotiations, The Rock buying the XFL, super agent Nick Khan leaving CAA for WWE, Spotify podcasts, what's going on with that, and sports in the pandemic, basically. So we get into a whole bunch of sports media, sports business things over the course of the next 30 minutes or so, and cover many topics. Before we get to it, let me just remind you, if you missed any past podcasts, we've had some phenomenal guests lately. Jeff Van Gundy last week, Joe Buck 2 weeks ago, Jay Onright 3 weeks ago, Jamel Hill, all in the archives. So if you can subscribe, download, rate, review, it helps tremendously. Van Gundy was excellent last week, by the way, if you missed that one. All right, let's get to this week's SI Media Podcast with John Oran from Sports Business Journal. All right, joining me now for the second time, because I didn't hit the record button the first time, is Sports Business Journal media reporter John Oran to cover some sports media news with me. John, how you doing?
Jimmy, I just gave you my best stuff, man.
Luckily, we only got one question in before I realized I'm a dope and didn't hit the record button.
Halfway through.
So as I said the first time around, and now we actually have it here on tape or digitally, I want to talk to you about NFL TV rights because you wrote a great story about that this week. But we're taping on Wednesday, and on Wednesday, the big sports media news of the day was that super agent Nick Khan left CAA to take a job with WWE as president and chief financial officer. Can you tell us what that means exactly for WWE? Most people listening to this just see the TV product and that's what they care about, but it'd be nice to get some insight into what this move means and how much of a coup this is for the WWE.
For the WWE, they let go of George Berrios and Michelle Wilson. They were the co-presidents, and that happened at the end of January. And since then, every time that they've had a quarterly earnings call, Vince McMahon has been bashed about declining TV ratings. With the coronavirus pandemic that we have going on right now, there have been no live events. I mean, to call the WWE business challenged is, an understatement right now, certainly. And so this is really a pretty high-profile message that the WWE is sending to the market, that they have replaced George and Michelle with somebody who is the ultimate media industry insider. He's somebody that helped grow the talent representation business at CAA just so significantly. And in fact, he also started to do a lot more in terms of rights negotiations too, including with WWE, which is where they found him. And so to me, this is a real message to the market saying, like, it's almost like Vince saying, I'm listening to you. I'm bringing in somebody to help me make this work.
And in terms of, though, WWE fans who are watching the TV product, and like you said, there's no fans right now. And who knows? I know SummerSlam, which was supposed to take place later this month, they've already canceled that, obviously. Do you know if this impacts what we see on TV at all in any way, shape, or form? This is strictly a business type of thing where fans won't even know that Nick Khan is working for WWE.
I think ultimately you'll see it affect some of the storylines that happen there. But I think the people that the executives that come up with the storylines are obviously very close to Vince. It's a small family. It's a public company, but it's a small family run company, and so they have a way to get into Vince for obvious reasons. But if you listen to the earnings calls that WWE has been on, they really think that, look, their TV ratings are doing particularly poorly right now in comparison to last year. The TV product, I know a lot of hardcore fans, and I'm not a huge fan, so I'm just reading sort of analyst reports and hearing from people in the business. So other people are more informed than I am. But the storylines that everybody complains about, a lot of the people within the WWE feel that those are storylines that are really enhanced if you get a full crowd going, and they're just sort of waiting until you can get some sort of audience to these shows. One thing that I can say about that, irrespective of storylines, which I'm really not qualified to talk on, but if you take a look at one of the reasons why Fox with baseball and with soccer, they're pumping in crowd noise because they view it as sports as a TV product, and they want to make good television. And so with the WWE, if you're wrestling in a studio or you're wrestling in an empty arena, it's wrestling in an empty arena. It's not as cool. If there's an engaged crowd that's there, that's part of the TV broadcast. And people within WWE and some analysts too feel like that's the main reason why ratings haven't rebounded in WWE like they have elsewhere.
I can tell you, speaking from my own experience, that I sort of go in waves with watching the WWE closely. But even if I'm not watching it closely, I always, have Monday Night Raw on one of my televisions just to keep track and, for work purposes. And I have to say, since the pandemic started and they've gone to no crowds, I can't watch it. I find it impossible to watch without the fans in the stands. So, you're talking about the ratings. Obviously, that's been a huge impact on them. Do you know how Fox, what they're feeling about their deal for SmackDown with WWE? Do they regret it? Are they happy with it? Do they blame the pandemic for the bad ratings? Where does Fox stand with their relationship with WWE?
Do they regret it? Not one bit. They love the WWE. I think they feel that they made too big of a bet on WWE in some ways, because they had this studio show that they seemed to get pretty good reviews, but those good reviews did not translate into good ratings or good viewership, and they end up losing a lot of money on that, or losing some money on that. But Fox has made a bet. The Fox network has made a bet more so than any of the other networks so far, and that's to bet on live programming. And the WWE is considered live programming, and Fox expects that it's going to anchor its Friday night lineup for the foreseeable future. And so they're completely in bed with WWE, and they haven't been shaken by that at all.
All right, let's switch gears now to the NFL. You had a great recap of the networks meeting with the NFL earlier this week, and sort of the results of that. They're not, I guess, in the hardcore negotiation stage yet. The two biggest takeaways for me, let's start with this. It sounds like, Fox, from what you reported, they want to keep their Sunday afternoon package. They love the NFC and the markets that brings. And, Sunday at 4:25 for CBS and Fox have proven to be the money slots. But they don't really, it doesn't seem like, I don't want to say care, maybe that's not the right word, but Thursday night doesn't seem to be a priority for them, which I was surprised by, because I thought it was doing very well for them. They did pay a lot of money for it. So what is the situation with the Thursday night package?
They like Thursday night. I think they'd be happy to keep Thursday night. I don't think that they will, Fox will do whatever it takes to keep its NFC-focused Sunday afternoon package. Fox will not do whatever it takes to keep Thursday night football. And I think that's sort of the distinction there. If they're able to renew Thursday night, they'll be happy with Thursday night. They think that it's a good way to sort of ease into the weekend of NFL programming. But it is, in terms of being a priority, Fox had a 2-hour meeting with the NFL. It was Lachlan Murdoch type of level that was in there. And in that 2-hour meeting, it was almost exclusively spent on Sunday afternoon. It was very little of that meeting was spent on Thursday night, so, which sort of tells you where the priorities are.
Would another network jump in on Thursday night? If Fox didn't, try to keep it, who do you think would try the hardest to get that package?
I think the most logical one to me is ESPN. I think ESPN really wants to get into the Super Bowl rotation. They have a broadcast network that's sitting right there that they really want to try to use for the NFL to help them get into the Super Bowl rotation, and they would seem to be a real that would seem to be a logical place for ESPN. Outside of ESPN, CBS had it before, and they passed on it when Fox got it. NBC had it before, they passed on it, and Fox got it. I mean, Thursday could be the type of lineup where if we see one of the big tech companies finally come in, and all they need to do is show a little bit of interest, and they're in. They haven't shown that interest yet, which is what I reported in that story, but that doesn't mean that they're out for good. But that could be something where, you know, they put a pretty poor schedule on Thursday nights and then package something for Tech just to try to get them hooked on NFL football.
And what's going on with Monday Night Football? I think your report was that ESPN wants to sort of upgrade their package. You just mentioned the Thursday, but I know Jim Miller has said many times recently that he wouldn't be shocked if Monday Night Football got off ESPN and went to ABC.
Oh yeah, that's been what ESPN's been talking about for a long time, and that certainly is part of the discussions. But here's the deal with Monday Night is for the longest time ESPN. I think it gets about $9 per subscriber per month from all the cable operators. And so they take $9, multiply it by 12 per, you know, 12 months in a year, and then multiply it by 80 million. And that's a pretty handsome number that's coming in. And so one of the reasons that license fee got to be so high was because they had the NFL, and operators knew that they couldn't drop ESPN if it had the NFL. Well, now in 2020, CBS and Fox and NBC all get, you know, they're not quite comparable, but and it's called retransmit consent fees, and they all get that as well. And so ESPN is saying to the NFL, look, everybody's built their business off of you. We're tired of paying double what everybody else is paying to get what they call the quote unquote cable package, which is, you know, the worst of all the primetime packages, or that the least competitive of all the primetime packages. So there's what they've said is, you know, they want either a better schedule on Monday Night Football, or for the $2 billion a year that it pays, which is, you know, $1 billion more than everybody else just about, you know, it just wants a better package, whatever that package may be. They didn't specify. I wasn't able to figure out whether they were talking about trying to poach Sunday Night from NBC, you know, and putting that over to ABC, or whether they were interested in getting one of the Sunday afternoon packages, which, you know, might be a bit more of a struggle just because they've had a hard time figuring out a broadcast booth for one game, much less, you know, have four or five games on a Sunday. But those are all sort of options that are out there for ESPN right now.
It's pretty amazing in this day and age of cord cutting and, you know, getting rid of television packages and going to streaming, that there's a network that wants to take their game off of cable and put it on network television.
Yeah. What took them so long, right?
Right.
What I find to be interesting about that is that, you know, everybody, I've been writing about this, I think, for a decade, Jimmy, like, when is big tech coming in? When are we going to see Facebook or Google or Amazon is the latest one? And what we've seen is these established traditional media companies have set up their own big tech companies. ESPN has ESPN Plus that they stream. ESPN has, NBC has Peacock, which they stream. CBS has CBS All Access, which they stream. So they've almost sort of seen what a potential competitor can come in and get. And they've launched something just to, you know, you want to get younger. They have the opportunity to get younger with a streaming service.
You took me where I was going next. Your report was all about the networks. Didn't hear much about streaming and Sunday Ticket. Is there anything new there? Anything with Sunday Ticket, with DirecTV having the exclusivity that we need to know about?
It's still to be determined. There's still a lot of negotiations happening. AT&T right now appears to be in a big cost-cutting mode. The message that they've been giving to the NFL is that, you know, they are most likely not going to step up at the same price point for Sunday Ticket again. I know the Sunday Ticket had an out, and AT&T allowed them to actually, I'm not sure if AT&T allowed them to take the out or the NFL took the out, but AT&T would not have been upset had the NFL found somebody else to take that package, and wow, Nobody else stepped up for the kind of money that DirecTV was paying. I keep saying AT&T because obviously AT&T owns DirecTV. So,
right.
So that is something. Could it go to an Amazon and be something that they offer a pay-per-view? Could it go to an ESPN Plus and be sort of part of a bigger deal over at ESPN? Those are all questions to be answered. One thing to keep in mind, though, is that all of the money that the broadcasters are paying for Sunday afternoon, that's all predicated on exclusivity. One of the reasons that they loved DirecTV having Sunday Ticket is because it was limited in terms of the number of people that could subscribe to it. If it all of a sudden gets to someplace like Amazon, which has 100 million Prime customers, you know, all of a sudden, unless the price point is at a certain, they want it to be rare. They want to make sure that people are watching. Most of the people are watching on their broadcast network and watching their commercials, which is how they can then turn around and afford a lot of these rights.
Interesting. I mean, I my ultimate hope is that there's a television element of Sunday Ticket that's not DirecTV, but it doesn't sound like that's going to happen. Like you said, DirecTV, AT&T opted back in. So I guess, you know, I don't want to stream the games. I want to watch them on a television, but which I know you can, but I mean, you know, traditionally.
Get off my lawn, Jimmy. Get off it.
Seriously. It drives me crazy. The other big story is, we first talked about wrestling and then we talked about the NFL. So we perfect segue into The Rock buying the XFL with some other people. Did he do this just because he got it for $15 million, which seems like nothing to buy a football league?
I feel like you and I could find a couple of investors and come up with $15 million for it. Yeah, I think that the price was really good. Remember, too, The Rock isn't the guy coming up with the $15 million. It's Redbird Capital is the private equity group that he's working with, and that's where this is all happening. I think that there have been so many failures in terms of spring football. I mean, you look at the Alliance of American Football, you look at the XFL 1.0 and 2.0, but people in television and people in sports all take a look at, look at the XFL, even the Alliance, the crowds came, the TV ratings, while not NFL worthy or college football worthy, were pretty good. They were okay. I think people think that there is a space for spring football, especially if they're able to do something to where they can sort of align with the NFL. And so it's a pretty good bet to see. Also, if I don't know what's going to happen in the spring, but if they're able to do it, having just like eight teams, you can put them in a bubble. Like you can't put, 30 teams or 32 NFL teams in a bubble. So who knows if they're going to be able to come out with something and people will be starved with football. They're nothing but big questions due to the coronavirus, but it's a pretty good, safe, easy bet, I think, for Redbird Capital and The Rock.
He put out some things on social media, but is he expected to be involved in this in a significant way?
He says he is. I take him at his word. I don't. I haven't covered The Rock a ton, but from everything that I've read, when he invests in something, he is active in his investments. He's not a passive investor.
Yeah, for sure. Running a football league, if he's still doing movies and entertainment and all that stuff.
Well, remember, this is also a football league that Vince McMahon launched. They have a whole, they had a whole like 3-4 year plan. They have Jeffrey Pollock, who is the president, that's really running the day to day and overseeing it. And he's still around and available. What surprised me was the Rock and Redbird were the only – the Rock and Redbird. What are we talking about here? But the Rock and Redbird Capital were really the only – that was the only significant bidder that came out for $15 million. I would have easily thought some – I could see Disney saying, just like the X Games, we want to own our own league, or NBC saying something like that, especially for something like $15 million, which doesn't sound like a lot in those terms. I mean, the fact that those were the only ones to really bid on it was, I found to be surprising.
MLB's come back. The NBA's come back. The NHL has come back. Before then, you had golf. You had some soccer going on. NASCAR, I believe. I hate to use the word benefit here because it's just not the right word to use, but I can't think of a better word, so I'm going to use it. But I think you'll know what I mean. But which sport has benefited the most from not having sports for a few months there and then returning? Is there a sport that ratings, interest, stuff like that? What sport has surprised you in terms of numbers from their return?
Yeah. Have you seen the PGA Tour numbers?
Yeah.
They started high and they've remained high compared to what they used to be. It's been really eye-opening for me. I think that they're certainly a big win. And I think that it's too early just because the NBA just launched and the NHL just launched. But I just want to take my hat off to the NHL. I think that their plan with two bubbles, and speaking solely from a media point of view, they're watching their games on NBC Sports Network. And I'm in D.C., so I watch the Caps on NBC Sports Washington. It looks like a regular NHL game. I mean, one of the complaints that we hear about the NBA is that it looks like summer league, or it feels like summer. That's not the case to me at all with the NHL. And I think that they're doing a particularly good job with their productions on the NHL. And I'm curious to get your thoughts on that, Jimmy. I mean, what of all the sports that have come back with no fans, they all look strange. What to you is doing, who's doing the best job with it?
Well, I think, the NBA, I think, you know, you said it looks like summer league. I don't disagree. It looks obviously completely different from a regular game, but I like the way it looks. I think there's an interesting feel there. I hate what baseball has done with virtual fans, cardboard cutouts. I think they're blowing such an opportunity here to just mic up the players, give us the natural sounds of the game.
I don't know if you're a hardcore fan when it comes to baseball. I think that the pumped in crowd noise the jury's still out on the virtual fans, but the pumped in crowd noise, I think the casual fan is much more attracted to.
I disagree from this standpoint. If you're a casual fan and not a diehard who's watching all the games of your team, you flip in the channels, there's a game on Fox or ESPN. I think you're more tempted to stay with it if they're giving you mic'd up players and what they're saying than fake crowd noise.
I would disagree in the sense, I'm a pretty hardcore fan too, although my team is not nearly as good as yours is here, the Orioles. But when I'm watching, I'm not watching every pitch. I'm doing something else. And so I need the auditory cues from a crowd to say like, oh, this is, I should look up because something is happening right now. I would think that there are more casual fans that watch it that way.
Yeah. I don't know. To me, I've said this a million times, I'm a broken record, but sports is the ultimate reality show. I prefer keeping it real than making it fake. So that's just me.
Yeah.
And I guess though, I mean, the piped in crowd noise, if I'm not mistaken, the stadiums themselves though, are piping in noise. So I think in some cases you're just getting what the stadium has there. I mean, I was listening to one of the Yankee Nationals games on the radio, and you know, after a play, like I think Linda Ronstadt and hit me with your best shot started blaring. I don't think that's the radio. I think that's what's in the stadium too. So I get why the stadium, I mean, the players probably in the stadium want the music and the noise and the sound effects. I don't think TV needs to add to it.
I don't want to show my age, but Pat Benatar has hit me with your best shot, not Linda Ronstadt.
Yeah. Oh, what did I said Linda Ronstadt?
Yeah, come on.
I knew that. That's just a Freudian slip. That's weird. I don't know why I said Linda Ronstadt. That is bizarre. But yes, it is Pat Benatar. That's an embarrassing mistake. I don't know why. But it wasn't a mistake. Why did I say that? Now I'm going to analyze that.
My high school years are coming back to me, Jimmy.
Yeah. It's a great song. I want to shift gears for a second to podcasts, because early on in the pandemic, I know most podcasts were struggling without people commuting to work, obviously, and without people going to gyms. I don't know how much the industry has bounced back, not bounced back. You could hit decline on that if you want. I hear it ringing.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. It's quite okay. This is what happens when you tape from home and there's a pandemic. But I noticed like Spotify really seems to just be ramping everything up. And The Ringer, I guess they added podcasts from Kyle Brandt. There's a podcast with CeCe Sabathia and Ryan Rucco that they just added. I think there's more announcements coming. JJ Redick just started a podcast. So where does the podcast game stand right now in terms of interest from companies?
The thing about sports podcasts, and like we have Sports Business Journal, I think we have like four or five or so. The Ringer and Spotify are seemingly launching a new one every 2 weeks. ESPN, you know, has what they call ESPN Audio, and there's such a flood of podcasts right now that are out there. And I think one of the strategies, like ESPN strategy, is I don't think they expect a ton of listeners per podcast, but if you take all of the podcasts and add them up, and you're not hiring a podcast host just to do podcasts, that's somebody that's going to be doing like a lot of other things. So you can take that expense, that salary expense, and put it across so many different things. But if you come to advertisers with the whole suite of podcasts and say, add it up, you have how many ever downloads, that's what it is. I think one of the things that, Bill Simmons got in trouble for this I think it was a New York Times story that he talked about, but he has the numbers from The Ringer, and when Bill Simmons hosts the podcast, you get a lot more listeners, and then everything else sort of is adjunct to that and builds up off that. But like there are a couple of different podcast stars, and those are the ones that are going to start to come out. I've done a couple stories. There are a couple of outfits out there that are trying to launch local podcasts, trying to take over for local radio. And that's their whole thing is if they come to market with a suite of 10 podcasts, that's how they can go to market. But if they're going to go to market with, just one local person, they're not going to get nearly enough downloads for it. So it's a completely different way of looking at a market than I think, sports television or sports radio is used to.
And the last thing I wanted to touch upon is,
how are your numbers on during the pandemic? Are people,
they went down, and then the last month they went up a nice amount. So
do you know why?
I don't know. Yeah. So we'll see. The bottom line is, without commuting and people, being on the move and the gym and all that stuff, it's tough. Most people listened on their commute.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea why they went up in the last month?
I don't know. I mean, I think some people went back, started going back to work. We started, I know here in New York, we started to open up last month. So I think that's probably the reason.
Mm-hmm.
And the last thing I wanted to touch upon with you is, before Corona and, maybe a year there, one of the big themes with sports business and sports media was gambling, because it was sort of opening up around the country in a lot of states. Networks were embracing it. Sports were embracing it. I still don't feel like I know ESPN has a show, and I know, a lot of companies, there's so many gambling podcasts now, and, they have the Action Network, for instance. But I still feel like it's still not this mega thing it was supposed to turn into. I feel like it's still sort of like a side item. You go to the restaurant and you have like the meat and potatoes, and it's like, and then there's like a little side vegetable there. Like, I still feel like there's a lot of room for growth, or is it not going to grow and this is what it is?
You're a gambler, right?
Yes.
So you're predisposed to doing this. The gamblers, I'm not a gambler. Mm-hmm. But the gamblers that I'm friends with, they still want to use their bookies, because they still want to gamble illegally, because they don't want to have to pay taxes on winnings. Is that what you're finding as well?
Well, I've always used an offshore site, and there's no reason for me to change. So, I never bothered to change, and it's not legal here in New York. So, the big attraction, I guess, with the states legalizing gambling is everyone's doing on apps and on phones, but you have to be in certain states for that. It's still not in all 50 states. But I think networks and websites and companies thought they'd be able to capitalize on a lot of gambling programming, and I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I'm even before the pandemic, I was very bearish on gambling. I think that gambling is something that will be a nice revenue stream. I think that for teams and for media networks, it's going to be huge in terms of sponsorship dollars, especially early on. But I don't, you know, people were thinking that this is going to be, you know, like you said, sort of the next big thing. I never saw it as anything that's going to be bigger than, say, you know, esports. And that's not to denigrate gambling. I think esports is pretty good, or action sports, mm-hmm. or, you know, it's not, you know, I don't think it's going to be ubiquitous. I do question some of these ideas of here in DC, they're opening up a sports book by Capital One Arena, you know, and the idea is that I'll go with my family to the sports book and have a dinner and go and put a bet on the game and then walk in. And to me, gambling is still it's still a vice. The idea that I'll be there with my little kids and may as well have a couple shots at the bar before heading in too. I don't see it as being, if it gets mainstream, it'll take a very long time for it to get mainstream. And I don't see that happening anytime soon.
And that's an industry, obviously, that was you couldn't take a bigger blow with the pandemic. You know, Vegas shut down, Atlantic City shut down. There's nothing to gamble on in terms of all these websites, whether it's DraftKings or FanDuel or whatever. So
as a pessimist before the pandemic, I really am now, because they have had nothing to bet on. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Well, I appreciate you coming on and giving us some good info there. And anytime you hear anything about NFL streaming and Sunday Ticket not being exclusive to DirecTV, please let us all know. That's what we're all waiting for more than anything. All
right, that's got to be my next story. Count on it.
Yeah, we need to not have DirecTV in our lives, and we need to be able to watch Sunday afternoon games somewhere else, anywhere else.
Fans don't want DirecTV. The DirecTV doesn't want Sunday Ticket. I think I don't know where this is going to end, but we need something to happen first.
Well, hopefully sooner than later. All right, John, thanks for coming on. Stay safe. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, man. Bye.
Okay, take care. All right, my thanks to John Oran from Sports Business Journal. Covered a lot of news there. If you missed any recent episodes of the SI Media podcast, please go into the archives and subscribe, rate, review. Jeff Van Gundy was on last week. He was great. Joe Buck 2 weeks ago, Jay Onright 3 weeks ago. So if you missed any of those, check them out. And please, again, if you're not a subscriber, hit that subscribe button. All right. That wraps up this edition. We will see you next week. Take care.